You know how a lot of people really like salted caramel? That sweet, rich caramel flavor, that bite of the salt, and come on, if you like it, you know you like it with a little extra salt, don't you? Of course you do. And that's why you listen to The Ron Van Dam Show. He is the sweet and salty treat of the podcasting world, with a little extra saltiness. It's an acquired taste. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh, boy.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. You should know where you are at all times. I'm going to entertain you. You sit down and I'll take care of things for a short period of time, then you go back to the life that you supposedly don't really have. You know what hurt me yesterday? My kneecaps. Actually, my left kneecap. And I don't know. It's not like I'm a professional soccer player or anything like that. But I don't know what the deal was. Like, how do you hurt your kneecap and not know it? Would someone take a lead pipe and take it to your knee, but you weren't paying attention? I mean, how does that happen? Yeah, I've said this before, I sleep wrong. Apparently, I'm perfectly fine when I go to bed. When I wake up in the morning, something hurts. Well, how did that happen? I wasn't doing anything. I was lying in a prone position on a bed. How could I hurt myself? Do I sleepwalk? No, I don't. I don't sleepwalk because that's too much effort. I don't walk when I'm awake. I don't understand. I'm scared to go to sleep. I figure if you know, when I wake up, I'm going to hurt myself while I was sleeping. I don't know what I'm doing. I was thinking of setting up a camera in my bedroom to see what I do. But I think that's a little weird. Setting up cameras to watch somebody, especially yourself. I don't know what it is. And then again, I could be getting old. You know, I mean, Every day is another day older, deeper in debt. I've stopped wearing watches. I was never a big watch person as far as not looking at people. I'm talking about telling the time. Never really cared about that. Do you know when I was growing up, they had a phone number that you could call at any time, and it was called time of day. And you call this phone number, and it tells you what time it is, and that's it. That's all it does. And I thought, oh, this is wonderful. And now I don't want to know what time it is. I don't care. When I see the time on a clock, I react to it like, oh, is that all it is? Or, my God, it's getting late. These days, it's more, is that all it is? Life has gotten a lot slower and yet keeps moving at a rapid pace. It's an amazing feeling. I'm sorry, I'm just talking and I didn't even realize you were in the room. I'm so sorry. How are you today? Good to see you. Hope you're feeling well. Here we are. We're all in this together. Oh, that's what they said on the Titanic. Holy crap. Uh-oh. Oh, man. Can you imagine being trapped on the Titanic with Celine Dion singing that song over and over again? That was such a long song, too. I used to be a wedding videographer, And I knew exactly how long every song was that a DJ would play at a wedding reception, because I had to be there every weekend. I went to like 3, 4, 5 weddings. I mean, that's all I did. Made a lot of money, but at the same time, just watching people having so much fun when you got to realize. I always wanted to go up to the bride and groom and say, I know you're getting married. I know this is like the biggest day of your life so far, but holy crap, you don't understand what's about to happen after you get married. You just have no Yes, we do, Ron. We've been living together for 5 years. It's not a big deal. It's just, we're just making it legal. Oh, no, you're not. No, no, you're not. No, you're not. It's a whole different ball game. Once you stand there and you say, I do, and the other one says, I do, it changes everything. Because now you're stuck, man. No, it's a lovely ride. It really is. For some, for others, it's not. I'm always surprised when somebody gets married and they get divorced and then they get married again. It's like, excuse me, do you understand that maybe you're not cut out for this? Not everybody's cut out for marriage. We're all being tested right now. This is a gigantic social experiment. How much tolerance do you have for somebody else when you're stuck in a building with them? How much tolerance do you have? The answer is none. No matter how much you love a person, respect them, they are your life partner, lock yourself in a room with that person for a period of time, and it changes quickly. But what you have to realize is these are unusual circumstances. They're not normal. It's not the new normal. There's no such thing as the new normal. Normal is normal, and there's not a new normal. So these are weird circumstances. So, you know, my advice to you is just put up with it. But as I said yesterday on the show, if you decide to have 5 kids, you're paying the price for that right now, big time. No one ever gets somebody pregnant or gets pregnant, and then they say to each other, oh my God, what did we do? What if we were all stuck in the house together for a long period of time? You don't think that. You don't think that's going to happen. We can't plan for the worst all the time. If we did, no one would get married and no one would do anything. Anyway, how are you? Good to be with you. This is just wonderful. Oh, my goodness, huh? I'm eating more cheese than I ever have in my life, and I don't know what it is about cheese. It's habit forming. Cocaine? Forget it. Cheese? I'm stuck. Literally stuck. Eat too much cheese, you can't go to the bathroom. It's a horrible payback situation. You want cheese? Go on, have some cheese. All right, now try to go to the bathroom. Oh my God, I can't. That's cheese for you. It's like a bait on a fishing hook, man. It reels you in, and then when you get there, it screws with you. Oh man, cheese. So many different types of cheese, too. All named after Jesus. Yeah. Seriously, did you know that? Cheese was named after Jesus. If you believe that, then there's something wrong with you. Cheese is what they put in a trap to catch a mouse. I'm telling you, man, cheese is nasty, nasty stuff. And as I said once before, the only people who got it right are the people who live in the Far East, the Oriental cultures. There is no cheese in their culture at all. None whatsoever. You cannot find a chop suey with cheese, please. It doesn't exist. There's no cheese in their culture. Is it because they don't have cows? No, they have beef. No, they have milk. They can make cheese. Well, what's the problem with them? They realize that it's like crack. They're already stuck on rice. Oh, my God. I've never seen a culture with so much rice involved. I mean, Indian food has a lot of rice, but Oriental cooking, holy crap, man. And that involves a lot of countries. They just like back up the truck and dump rice into the bowl. Oh, my God. And the culture, the Chinese culture, they They just shovel it. They don't even pick it up. You can't pick up rice with chopsticks because it falls right through. It makes no sense. And they don't use utensils because that would change everything and make eating too easy. So what they do is they just they hold the bowl up to their mouth and they shovel the rice into their mouth. Yeah, it's like a construction crew. Yeah, it's like a dump truck. It is. That's the way they eat, man. Can't do it. I think I told you this story once, but maybe I didn't. So if I didn't, I'm telling you now. When I was doing the wedding videographer thing, which was a wonderful job, I got paid to go to people's parties. So I was doing the wedding videographer thing, and this was in the Boston area, and there's a Chinatown in Boston, as there is in many cities across the United States. So there's a Chinatown there, and this couple happened to be Chinese. Whoa, how does that happen, huh? So they got married in a church, and then the entire wedding party and all the guests went to Chinatown. Just try to park your car there. You can't. But we did, and went inside. It was a luxurious Chinese restaurant, and they had rented out an entire floor in this building of this Chinese restaurant. And so I'm standing there, and I'm doing my wedding thing, and they're cutting the cake, and they're doing their stuff, and then they sit down, and they have the Chinese meal. But the Chinese meal was on a lazy Susan. Yes, some girl named Susan was lying on her back. They put little egg rolls on her nipples. No, that's not what happened, although that would be a fascinating wedding reception. Now, Lazy Susan is like a disc that that spins around, and you put the food dishes on it, and you all just dive in, and you take a little bit from the bowls. It's a very communal way of eating. It's the opposite of any way I would want to eat ever. You're sitting elbow to elbow with other people in a circle, and in the middle is food that spins around, and you take your utensil or your chopsticks and you pick it out of a communal bowl. Yeah, the chopsticks where you put that and put it in your mouth to get saliva all over those wooden sticks, and then you stick them in a communal bowl, and you take some egg rolls, and you take some of the lo mein and stuff. But it's just disgusting. It's a disgusting way of eating. It's too communal for me. Communal is not a friendly word to me. It shouldn't be to you either. But that's the way they eat. Perhaps that's why diseases get going over there, because they're all sticking their saliva sticks into the communal food bowls. Not a real healthy way to eat. But that's what they were doing. And I was looking at that, and I said to the photographer who I was working with, I said, I can't eat this shit. I can't. I'm not. People had their saliva sticks in the bowls. I'm not eating like this. He says, what are you going to do, Ron? Aren't you hungry? Yes, I'm starving, but I can't do that. I'm like a miniature Howie Mandel that actually makes sense. I mean, that makes no sense. Look, I enjoy eating chopsticks as much as the next person, but sticking it in my mouth, getting saliva on the tips, and then sticking in a communal food bowl? No, thank you. I do have a brain, and I do try to make some sense of things that are going on, and that makes no sense. I have a thing about that. When someone, you go to a bar, I've never been to a bar in my life, but if you went to a bar, and someone orders a drink, and they go, oh, Ron, this is a really good drink. Oh, here, Ron, try it. What are you asking me to do? Well, go on, try the drink. Have a sip from my glass and try the drink. It's really good. But your lips were on the rim. Yes, so? Yeah, but I can't do that. Oh, come on, stop being such a Howie Mandel. Go on, try the drink. I can't. You put your lips on the rim of the drink. I can't, the glass. I can't do it. I have a thing about that. I actually do. I'm conscious of where people put their mouth. But Ron, don't you kiss people? No, not indiscriminately. No, I don't. No, unless I can get something out of it. But no, I don't. No. I don't just walk around kissing people. I mean, come on, man. I don't walk around going to tables at a restaurant. Excuse me, that food looks good. May I take some off your plate with your fork, please? With the fork that you put in your mouth, may I use that fork to try some of your food that you've been salivating over? Salivating is, by the way, not a verb. It's a word that does not exist, but yet would make sense because everybody would know what you're talking about. Anyway, are you following me today? We all have our little things. We all have our phobias. Everybody that I know has one. Everybody. I can't do that. I know I'm sorry. I can't do that. Well, okay. All right, fine. Whatever. Anyway, how you doing? You feeling all right? Me too. Anyway, my guest is around the corner, and we're going to sit down and talk to our guest. I hope you can join me for that. Are you ready? Are you properly dressed for this? We're having somebody over. We're having a guest over. Put some pants on, will you? Oh, I've heard that so much in my life. Ron, they'll be here in 10 minutes. Would you go upstairs and put some pants on? Putting pants on means there's a guest coming over. I get that a lot, you know. Go upstairs and put some pants on. I also get that we have a guest coming over. Now, try to be nice. Yeah, I get that. People actually have to say that to me. Ron, try to be nice. What are you inferring, that I'm not nice all the time? Yes, that's what we're inferring. What is this, an intervention? Is that what this is? Is that who's coming over? A group of people to intervene in my life? Is that what you're doing? It might be an intervention, it might not. All I'm asking you is to please put some pants on and try to be nice. August Durack joins us now. He's a highly successful entrepreneur. He's an award-winning author, speaker, contributed for Forbes and the BBC, and he's a founder of the educational nonprofit Self-Knowledge Symposium Foundation, and he's all over the place, and here he is right now. Thanks for being with us.
It's my daughter.
Yeah, this is fascinating. You've written a couple of real successful books: The Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, One CEO's Quest for Meaning and Authenticity, and Brother John, a Monk, a Pilgrim, and The Purpose of Life. It sounds like it's mixing business with some type of spiritualism or way of life.
Yes, it's absolutely. Actually, you kind of got it a little bit upside down, because Brother John was originally a Templeton Prize essay contest that I won for $100,000. And originally, the question that I had to answer for that contest was, what is the purpose of life? And I wrote about a monk, Brother John, an encounter I had on Christmas Eve. And it was only later, so after I won that award, that I sat down on a weekend and said, wait a second, why are these monks so darn good in business? Mm-hmm. And so I wrote what I thought was a white paper. Somebody gave it to an editor at Forbes. They turned it into an article. It went viral. Then I got an invitation to become a Forbes contributor. Then I got an invitation from Columbia Business School to turn it into a book.
Okay.
So my fundamentally, what I'm constantly talking about, matter of fact, I'll cut to the chase by telling you what my publisher of Business Secrets told me. He said, you're not kidding me. And I said, what do you mean, Miles? And he said, He said, this business book is a Trojan horse. He said, you're using business as a way to shove all your spiritual ideas inside of. So I constantly say, even in Business Secrets, that, you know, we're not just talking about business. We're talking about a higher way of living your life that will pay off in business. Mm. It will pay off in your personal life. It will pay off in every way. So I'm really just taking the lessons from Brother John and what is the purpose of life and applying them in another context.
Sounds like a win-win-win-win-win-win-win situation.
Well, it has been for me.
That's okay. All right. Now, I didn't even know what a Trappist monk was until I did a little bit of research, and I think most people are in a similar situation. Can you fill me in on that?
Well, back in the 6th century, a guy named St. Benedict started the Western monastic tradition, and he came up with a thing called the Rule of St. Benedict for how monks ought to live their lives based on prayer and work. Mm-hmm. And in about the 11th century, some of the Benedictines thought that they were getting too fat and happy, so they splintered off into what are called Cistercians. Uh-huh. And they went back to their roots. And then in the 19th century, a monastery in La Trappe, France, a Cistercian monastery, decided maybe the Cistercians were getting a little too fat and happy, and they reformed. And all of the monasteries here in the United States are what are called daughter houses of that La Trappe monastery in France. So that's why they got the nickname Trappists.
I gotcha. But they are monks. Are there vows of silence in the whole bit?
Well, they don't take a vow of silence anymore. They take the same vows that all the clergy, you know, the monks, which is poverty, chastity, and obedience.
Okay.
But they have relaxed the rule on silence. Before Vatican II, they would, except for a dire emergency, they couldn't speak. Now they keep very. It certainly isn't a noisy place. Believe me,
it's like a library, right?
Yes. Casual talking is that's a good example. So although I keep hearing people say now that our libraries are getting real noisy, but anyway, yes. So casual talking is actively discouraged. There are times set aside, like Sundays.
Yeah.
Afternoons or between 6:30 and 7:30 at night, where you're encouraged to get together with other people and chat if you want.
Interesting. I'm going to try to get my wife to be one. Okay.
Well, they're called Trappistines.
Okay. Oh, there's actually a term for that. Okay.
Yes.
So they have been successful in business, and this has been transformed into what you're doing here. I guess there are a lot of messages that are transformed from one to the other. But again, what business related situations are the transformation?
Okay, so first of all, we'll go back to my brother John, the monk of Pilgrim Enlightenment. So when I answered the question, "What is the purpose of life?" I said, "There isn't a different." I thought I was going to had no chance of winning once I said this. There are not different strokes for different folks. We don't have different purposes of life. We are all here for exactly the same reason. And that reason is to become the best human being we can possibly be, which I then used another term, self-transcendence, to transcend ourselves. Uh-huh. And in Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, I expanded on that. And I said, the purpose of every human life, I define self-transcendence, is to be transformed from a selfish to a selfless person. So every child starts out screaming, mine, mine, mine. Right. Kids are not the most selfless people.
Right.
And the further along on that trajectory of selflessness you get, the more purpose of your life you're realizing, and the better your life is going to run. So let's jump down to business real quickly here. I'll give you some examples. For example, I write on leadership for Forbes. I'm a Forbes contributor on leadership. Mm-hmm. And leaders, most people want to be leaders for selfish reasons. They want to get ahead. They want to get promoted. They want to make more money.
Power.
But by what power? Uh-huh. But the greatest leaders know that it's not my job. The reason I'm a leader is not for me to get promoted, but me to get you promoted. And the better job I do of forgetting my own career and fanatically focusing selflessly on getting my people promoted, ironically, the faster I get promoted. And the same thing with sales. I was a good enough salesman that I was actually on the cover of Selling Magazine at one point. And every great salesman knows that the more he forgets about himself, forgets about his product, forgets about his quota, forgets about his commissions, and fanatically and selflessly figures out how to help his customer, the more sales he makes.
True.
So these kinds of examples are rampant. Of course, I use them again and again throughout my Business Secrets, the Trappist Monks book. As a matter of fact, my Business Secrets is not just about the Trappists, but it illustrates how me and three partners started with $2,500 used the Trappist principles and ended up with $150 million about eight years later by building a couple of software companies based on Trappist principles. So it's not just theoretical stuff here that I'm talking about.
No, and it's that's amazing because it's long been a theory, but not a lot of people can pull it off, where if you make other people successful, you are successful to the point where people want to work for your company. They'll knock down the doors. They'll wait till somebody dies so you can get a slot to get into your company.
Go to the head of the class.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, one of the criticisms that I get on Business Secrets is, oh, sure, the monks are successful. They forget the fact that there's all this stuff about my own company. But they've got free labor. And I said, well, you know, I'm not for free labor, mm-hmm. not paying people. But I said, why don't you have free labor? Mm-hmm. They have free labor. People like me, you know, and not just the monks. I mean, people flock down there begging for it. Give me some work. Give me something to do.
Yeah.
I said, why is it? Because they have a high overarching mission of something that people want to be a part of. I said, crowdsourcing. We have all these examples of people that will do free work for if you give them something that is meaningful to do.
There's no question about it. If you love your work, you're going to do well, and everybody around you is. It's almost like, you know, you can even transform that into personal life. If your partner, if your spouse is happy, you're going to be real happy too.
Mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right? I keep coming back to that, you know, that if you live your life selflessly, every area of your life is going to work. Mm-hmm. All this stuff is going to come back to you. You know, the old saying, you know, it's not happy people that are grateful, it's grateful people that are happy.
Yeah.
And if you're constantly reaching out to other people. But the other thing is, what we forget is how much joy. I mean, that, for example, does a parent get more, you know, if you think about, I'm not a parent, but I mean, I play one on TV, but there's a parent really, and I've had so many parents tell me this, you know, I get so much more pleasure out of seeing my son hit a home run than I did out of getting one when I was a kid.
Right, right.
And so you get so much more pleasure out of turning somebody else onto some new music than you got out of it when you got turned onto it. When your whole life, in what people don't understand is your whole life can become like that. You can really honestly say that I really get a bigger kick out of seeing somebody else get promoted than I do out of getting myself promoted. So it isn't sackcloth and ashes that I've got to make all these sacrifices and grit my teeth and live this dry, gray life because somehow or another it's going to pay off down the road. No, it's not that at all. And you don't have to naturally be that way. You know, Aristotle said, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence is not a choice, it's a habit. And so if you just get in the habit of being that way, you gradually become a selfless person and it becomes second nature and it becomes something you really look forward to doing. It doesn't have to be sackcloth and ashes.
Makes sense. You do motivational speaking, obviously.
Well, I, you know, not technically motivational.
Well, you should.
I do a lot of speaking, but it's not technically motivational.
You should do that. You should be on a stage, you know, wandering the stage like, like somebody. And then people in the audience are sitting there, and when they leave, they feel better than when they went in. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's funny that you bring that up. You bring up a lot of great points, by the way. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What I'm really working towards is that, you know, there's in the religious circles, they call it the retreat high. Mm-hmm. And I come out of the business, you know, and I can't tell you how many times, but yeah, you go to the motivational speak, you feel good for about 30 seconds, right. And then you go back to being the same schmuck you were before.
Right.
To me, my whole book is about, there's a whole process. I call it a transformational organization. And I say the monks are a transformational organization because it's a becoming process. You don't go to a inspirational speech and become a Marine. You go in as a recruit, you go through a 12-week program, you know, you're not even allowed to talk about yourself in the first person. You call yourself Recruit Turek this, Recruit Turek says that. And then you go through this entire 12-week program, and somehow or another you're transformed like a caterpillar being transformed into a butterfly, and you become a Marine. So my whole work is trying to convince people that this is a process they have to go through. I call it the hero's journey. You have to go through the hero's journey. You can't just go to a motivational speech. you know, and that's why I'm not, you know, all that, you know, I'll do it. You know, there's nothing wrong with motivational speaking. I'm not saying, but to me, I'm far more interested in what I call formation, which is a religious term for this overall process of transformation. I said, for another example of a transformation organization is Alcoholics Anonymous. Uh-huh. And they don't tell you in Alcoholics Anonymous that you can go to a speech and get really inspired and now you're never going to drink again.
That's true.
You have to go through the 12-step Correct. Program. It might take a year. It might take 2 years. Yeah. And you don't learn to be alcohol-free, a recovering alcoholic. You become.
Right. You actually have to live it. As
you
opposed
have
to just
live it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Wow, I'm really enjoying this interview. You're great.
Hey, thank you. This is fascinating. Now, how do we get a hold of more information about this? The books are around, certainly. Well, the book. And, how do we get into this?
Well, you can find out more about it at augustturek.com. That's August like the month. Mm-hmm. Turek, T as in Tom, Urak.com. You can also, if you go to Forbes.com, mm-hmm. You can just punch in my name, August Turek, and it'll pull up all these wonderful articles that I written about leadership. And of course, you can go to Amazon or someplace like that, and you can get Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks and my Brother John books.
Perfect. It's inspiring, without question. And I'm glad you're doing this, and thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
enjoyed every minute.
Been a pleasure speaking to you. Maybe we'll hook up again in the future.
Let's do it.
You got a deal. Thank you, August.
Thank you.
Take care. Well, that'll do it for today. You've been wonderful, as you usually are. You were very nice when our guest was here, so that counts toward points toward your education. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I will. Until then, I wish you peace.